Shrink Wrap Radio number 901. Psychologist David Stone, PhD, and psychiatrist Dr. Matt Keen on the psychological value of playing board games.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guests today are two remarkable individuals, lifelong friends, veterans, and now board game developers. Psychologist Dr. David Stone and psychiatrist Dr. Matt Keen. Not only are David and Matt incredibly knowledgeable in their respective practices, but their unique perspective as board game developers offers valuable insights into the mental health benefits of board game play. By combining their extensive knowledge in the science of the mind, human interaction, and personality types, David and Matt's game, Think Like a Shrink, lightheartedly touches upon the relationships between others through gameplay. Now, here's the interview. Psychologist Dr. David Stone and psychiatrist Dr. Matt Keen, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. I've been really eager to speak with you. I was so intrigued by your professional accomplishments of each of you and your long-term relationship with one another. And I just really, this is something that I wanted to talk about. I knew I wanted to do an interview with you guys as soon as it became a possibility. I'd like to start out, I would like my audience to know about your stellar wonderfulness for each of you. And you have very, very long bios, which people can go to on the show notes and find, and I recommend that they do. But you're both so accomplished and have had highlights that I think are interesting. So let me ask you to take a couple of turns separately and to kind of sketch out some of your professional and business accomplishments prior to collaborating on a board game. And David, since you're at the top of my screen, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I got my graduate degree from Michigan State University, is where I got my doctorate. In counseling psychology with an emphasis in neuropsychology. Prior to that, a counseling degree from Chapman University, I got my master's degree. And I would think the highlight of my professional career as a psychologist was the time I spent in the Air Force back in the 90s as a base psychologist at Luke Air Force Base in Arizona, which is where I met Matt. I left the practice of psychology in the year 2000 to move into the business world and spent a good deal of my time working in the field of technical sales and sales management, and retired from that just a couple of years ago. And that's when this whole game business kind of came out of me.
Wow. Wow. And that's an interesting switch. I also, after having my home practice being in psychology, I got restless and I felt I needed to challenge. I thought maybe I had I had taken the easy route by staying in academia, and I wondered how I might do in another area and kind of in the business area. And so I ended up getting involved in market research and had a long parallel career because I was interested in technology and I wanted to steer it. The whole computer revolution started, and so I wanted to get involved in that. So I can relate to that desire to check out the other side of the world. And didn't you write a book called Chocolate is my Kryptonite, Feeding Your Feelings, How to Survive the Forces of Food?
That is actually...
That's Matt. Okay, well, that can be your entree, Matt. On the world, did you come to? How did you come to do that?
Yeah, so that's actually a interesting chapter in my life. I started off by going to medical school at Georgetown. I was fortunate enough to have the Air Force pay for it. I ended up doing my residency initially in ophthalmology, and I just could not look at eyeballs. So I switched to psychiatry. And while I was in Cleveland doing my residency, I did a moonlighting job at an addiction facility. And while I was there, they decided to open up a unit for compulsive overeating. And there were a significant number of parallels between people who had compulsive overeating and people who had true sort of a primary addictive disorders, what was alcohol, drugs, et cetera. So I became very active in that and became a passion of mine to talk about. So I ended up publishing a book on that right as I was actually leaving the military and brought that to market, which was probably my first foray into business. And then subsequently, it did a really nice job of launching a speaking career, which I then continued on for about a decade and then transitioned that into becoming the national practice leader for Medco, which at the time was the largest pharmacy benefit manager in charge of all their neuroscience. So we had about a $3.2 billion budget to manage.
Oh my goodness.
It really gave me a very, very in-depth crash course on business that I've just now continued on in my both professional and personal life.
Yeah, well, you guys have had both such stellar business careers and professional careers. And how long have you been buddies?
We met in 1995 when I came out of officer training school and was placed at Luke Air Force Base. Matt was already there as the clinic psychiatrist. He was running the clinic, and I was a psychologist that joined the clinic. So we've known each other for almost 30 years.
Wow. Wow. But you haven't always worked together, right? You've had fairly separate careers for much of it. How did it come together that you guys decided to collaborate on board games?
Well, we've been friends for that 30 years, and part of our social friendship is that we enjoy playing games. And when we get together with our families and our wives, we would often play board games. So, you know, you were correct. Matt and I worked together for 3 years before he got out of the Air Force. And then I followed him a year later out of the Air Force as well. So I think our joint love of board games has been there. But what really was the catalyst was during COVID, I got bored with playing the same games, and I decided to start a board game company and launch a couple of other games. First one is called Doozy Dice, and the other one is called Boozy Dice, and another one called Kadoozy. And that was, and Matt became very interested and very supportive and participated in helping me develop those games, which then naturally led us to, we had a joint desire to create a game about psychology and fill a niche in the market that nobody had ever touched. Matt, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that.
No, I think what we really looked to do was collaborate together to really try and come up with a concept that could hopefully niche a new category of games that play on psychological principles, but do so in a way that's not heavy, not too emotionally laden and burdensome, but actually fun, engaging, entertaining, And the entire goal is to build social connectedness, because what we find so oftentimes, especially this is true in COVID, people become so disconnected from each other, it creates and adds to the burden of mental health. And that's even more so, I think, in people who just become consumed with video games. There's not that interpersonal engagement that you get with a board game. So if we can combine that social connectedness with just basic psychological principles, we thought we'd have a winner.
Yeah, yeah. I thought of that just from our own, that idea resonated with me right away because of my own family's love of games and board games. We have four kids and seven grandkids, and so there are always games happening when everybody's together. And I've done a lot of interviews on video games, but this was nobody had suggested. I never thought of you know, board games. Oh yeah, board games. I remember those. Yeah. So you looked into the research on this. You guys did some research. And what did you find? What did the psychological research reveal?
So there's actually a fair amount of research looking at different components of the mental health benefits of games in general and board games versus video games. Probably the overarching realization is board games have been shown throughout multiple studies to improve symptoms in individuals who experience panic attack, ADHD, depression, sort of generalized anxiety. There was a large 2013 study. This is from the PACWID cohort, which followed over 3,500 patients in Bordeaux, France, over 20 plus years. It's really one of the longest cohort studies out there. And they looked at the individuals who played board games versus those who did not. And those who played board games over time had a 15% lower incidence of developing dementia. It wasn't just a short-term effect. This was a long-term effect over a couple of decades, which is very, very cool. And as we get older, we realize that, you know, we can have some physical disabilities with mild hearing impairment or visual impairment, but board games can typically overcome those impairments and allow people to continue to participate in those games. So from youth all the way to as we age, board games can be an effective mental health tool. And one thing that's actually interesting, they've done data on this for some of the more strategic-based games such as chess and Go, and it actually increases brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor playing those games, which, as you know, increases neuroplasticity and, in general, can make us brighter, happier, healthier people. And those aspects don't actually translate necessarily to video games. Video games are very good at enhancing visual spatial awareness, some cognitive flexibility and things of that nature. But board games do a much, much better job of improving verbal fluency, attention, and just general cognition, and even things such as mindfulness.
Yeah, and there's all this research on the evils of video games, particularly for kids, that it doesn't seem to be doing them any real favors socially and emotionally and psychologically. So it's so really refreshing to hear this other side of the coin here. And I was curious to, you know, one of my questions I wanted to ask you, Matt, was about since I knew you have a background in neuropsychology, you know, you've really spoken to that here, the powerful benefits, and that's really exciting. I'm going to amp up my board game playing.
Dr. Dave, it's funny growing up, I think people have kind of a misconception or a perception of people, for example, in convalescent homes sitting around, you know, on a Tuesday morning playing board games and, you know, kind of thinking that, you know, that's something there to kind of just give them something to do, right? To fill the time. But it's not just about filling time. It's a marvelous way to not only get them the social interact, which has benefits by itself, but all the other cognitive benefits that Matt just talked about. And it should be part of everyone, in my opinion, everyone's life to engage in board games, just because of that profound benefit you get from doing it. If you think about it, if you ask five people to sit around a table and have a conversation, call it group therapy, whatever. And, you know, therapy has a therapist there to facilitate. But let's say you don't have a therapist and people are just going to talk. It's very awkward. It's kind of hard to get the ball rolling, so to speak.
Sure.
You drop a board game in there, and now you've got something to do, and then the conversation and interaction just starts to happen.
Yeah. Is there any research that had been done in nursing homes and such that kind of looks specifically at that?
Not that I'm aware of, but I can honestly say that I haven't looked deeply in that, because when I first conceived of the game with Matt, it was really just to create a party game that would create some fun conversation. And we found out some other things were happening during the game when we watched people play, but it wasn't really coming out of the research. We were aware of the research, but we were just trying to make a game that give people a really good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't have you contacted me earlier today to ask if I had a copy of the game, but I don't. So tell us about the game, which is named Think Like a Shrink.
Yes.
And you said it's fun and it's interactive, and it's not apparent to me how that can be the case.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm gonna enlighten you, because okay. I think you'd really enjoy it. So the basic premise of Think Like a Shrink, we call it, fake therapy, but real hilarity. So it's a game in which players try to predict the thoughts, emotions, and experiences of the other players. So by doing so, being a, quote, shrink, and trying to predict the thoughts, emotions, and experiences of somebody that's a patient. And so, you know, in the world of board games, whenever you create a board game, you have to decide on certain mechanics that go into the game, like rolling the dice or taking turns or discarding cards or making groups of cards. So you have to have a mechanic. The mechanic that we built our game upon, Think Like a Shrink, is the mechanic of a psychological principle of free association. So what we did, Dr. Dave, is we leveraged this idea of free association. So, for example, if I were to say to you chicken, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Pecking.
Okay, pecking. And so common answers to that are egg, right? Chicken and egg, chicken pecking, things like that. But because there's a lot of associations that we've all heard about chicken and the chicken and the egg association. But what if we gave people things that were more abstract that they have no previous association with? And that's exactly what we did. And the way we did that was we created 200 prompts. So these are cards that have prompts on them. And some of the prompts, for example, you wave at somebody and they don't wave back. Or a prompt could be, you got invited to your ex's wedding. Or a prompt could be, you became an empty nester. Or some of them are more funny, which is, why does that cloud look like my mother is spanking me? Or one that might say, you thought your webcam was off. Your aunt keeps knitting you sweaters even though you live in Hawaii, right? So we have prompts that are from all parts of life. Some are happy, some are sad, some are about stress. And then what we also have is we have 160 what we call snapshots. And the snapshots are just random photos from life. For example, a roll of duct tape, a pair of boots, a hypodermic needle, some lemons, a mousetrap, a cigar, an eyeball, a button. And so just random pictures. And what we do when we play the game is we actually have the patient, quote patient, turn over a prompt. For example, let's take a selfie. That's the prompt. And then we turn over five snapshots. So now you have a prompt in the middle and you have five snapshots. And the objective for the patient is the patient has to do three things. One is they need to identify what emotion they experience when they take a selfie. Well, onto that prompt, let's take a selfie. We have six emotion cards, each one with a different emotion: happy, sad, disgust, fear, etc. So the patient decides, how does that card make them feel? And they keep it to themselves. Their next task, Dr. Dave, is they have to choose one snapshot. One of those pictures, they have to create an association with the let's take selfie. And it may not be obvious. Now, maybe one of the pictures is a selfie stick, which we have one, by the way. And so maybe they would choose the selfie stick because there's an obvious connection between taking a selfie and a selfie stick. But what if the selfie stick is not there and they've got a pig nose, a mouse trap, a button, a hat, and a pair of boots? Now they have to actually find some way to create a story or a connection based on experience or based on their creativity. And they have to choose one of those, and they have to write down why they chose the snapshot that they chose. Now, while they're doing that, the psychiatrists or the shrinks are doing the same thing about the patient. So we're trying to figure out which snapshot did they choose, why did they choose it, and we try to predict which emotion they chose in reaction to the let's take a selfie. Once everybody has made their selections, on the count of three, just the shrinks will point to the snapshot that they chose for the patient. And then one by one, each shrink will give their diagnosis, their quote diagnosis, and say something like, Dr. Dave, I think you chose the duct tape to take it for whatever reason that you would create, and that your emotion to taking a selfie was happiness. Each shrink does their three predictions. And then at the end of that, I know there's a lot of words here, but the patient then reveals what they actually did choose, why they chose it, and what emotion they were feeling. And that's the basic mechanic of the game, and it leads to some incredible interactions.
Yeah, it sounds like it would. And I must say that you're winning me over. I had some, I'll tell you about my negative reactions. I didn't expect to have any negative reactions. And then suddenly I thought, oh my God, I have a negative reaction. I tend to be a pretty softball interviewer. So there are two roles. The group are shrinks, and the person who's up is a patient.
Yes.
So I have to ask you, does this trigger any bad stuff for anybody in your experience?
I would say it almost always does not. We purposely tried to create prompts that would not trigger significantly heavy emotions, and we purposely did our best to create snapshots that were similarly veiled. We also made certain not to include politics and things of that nature that are going to be divisive.
Yeah.
Although it's a game that's intended for adults, and if you played it with kids, there would be a few prompts and a few snapshots you'd remove. We've had parents come up with kids as young as 5 years old who have not only played the game, but experienced in a way that was surprisingly brilliant for kids of that age. And now these were parents who were very, very dialed in and very obviously skilled at raising their children. But it was amazing to see how it could translate across even a younger crowd.
And Dr.
That was great to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. We have play tested this extensively all over the country, and including Matt and I flew out to Boise, Idaho, to a fall festival, and we set up a mock office in the middle of a parking lot where we had a couch, a rug, two chairs, a fake ficus tree. And we sat there with the game on the table wearing our Think Like a Shrink t-shirts and just let random people come by and sit down and ask, well, what is this all about? And I said, well, why don't we sit down and play around? And we had complete strangers play it and have not just laughs, but true poignant moments of connection where children learned something about their parent they didn't know, and they got emotional on the spot, and you know, it was just, it was beautiful. And yeah. we've only had one report of a couple that played this at game night, and the prompt was, somebody's talking behind you when you're in the movie theater, and the husband got the wrong answer about his wife, and she went off on him about, how could you not possibly know that I hate that? I've told you a million times. But I mean, that's about as bad as it's gotten. It's really more fun. It's not stressful.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm a little embarrassed by the way that I've gone off on it. And I'll tell you where I went, because somehow I got the impression that it was that the game involved standard diagnostic categories, and that people were going to diagnose each other. And I'm so glad to hear that you didn't go down that route, and clearly you didn't even consider going down that route, and you considered all the important factors. Yeah. And I guess I'll spare you my whole rant that I was I really had a rant going here that I was prepared to go to.
We decidedly are not trying to diagnose anyone whatsoever.
Oh no,
there's no labels of anything DSM-5 involved. It is pure fun. If you're a board game player, I'm sure there are a number of board games out there where the audience or the game players have cards, and everyone has 10 cards as a prompt, and you select what you think the funniest is, and the player just who is the turn it is will select what they think it is, and if you match, you get a point. But there's no real interaction there. It's just to try and see if you match. The goal of our game was to add that layer of telling stories, you know, trying to come up with a story to connect these cards. Often, when it works the best, the people will reveal aspects of their life, which is why they made that connection. And when you see that happen, it doesn't become just a game night. It becomes a really memorable moment. And that's the key thing that I think this game creates, is just these memorable moments that you will remember weeks or months down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the place that I went thinking that it involved diagnosis was, you know, my wife and I, we were at the University of Michigan, speaking of Michigan, and that's where I did my doctoral work. And we got involved on a lark. We went to Synanon that had a form of attack therapy that they called the game, and it was really attack therapy. And so here we were as straights from the outside with a bunch of seasoned psychopaths, if you will, who are just tearing us a new one every way they could think of. And the theory was, it'll just make you stronger. You've got to learn to halt, you know, there was a way in which it had a kind of a certain face validity, you know, that we tried to buy into, but ultimately we decided it wasn't for us. It was toxic, et cetera. And I also had experience with other therapeutic approaches, because I've always been very, very open to exploring, particularly in my younger years, various therapeutic modalities. And so I experimented with and looked into things like primal therapy, rebirthing, rational emotive therapy, implosive therapy. And one of the conclusions that I came up with, and then I'll quit my rant, is that human beings are incredibly plastic in the way that they can adapt to various systems. And so all of these systems had probably some people who got some value out of it. But in the big picture, these approaches were not pro-social. I would say we're not pro-social, not healthy. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that you weren't doing any of that. And I'm so glad to hear about the wonderful positive direction that you have pursued, the way you very thoughtfully thought about any possible places where it could go wrong, and you avoided those very effectively. And so my hat's off to you guys for your creativity and your innovativeness. One of my questions I have here is, who do you see as your target market?
That's a great question. The game is labeled as 17 plus, and I think that, you know, any adult would benefit from playing the game and enjoy it very much. But I would say that the ones we've seen enjoy it the most are probably from about 25 to 55. That's eliminating some people that would also really enjoy the game. So male, female, it doesn't really matter. It's really a game for everyone.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I would say as well that one of the most memorable moments we saw in Boise was with a gentleman who's probably in his 70s and his adult daughter. They had a really good interaction about one of the prompts. I think the prompt was your first sip of coffee in the morning. And again, there were five snapshots. One of them was a guy who was very energized, which is what she picked for her dad's choice. But he actually picked a cabin in the woods in the winter. And she's like, I don't understand why you would pick a cabin in the woods in winter for your first sip of coffee. And she goes, he says to his daughter, when I was younger, my grandfather had a cabin in the woods and it would snow. And I remember vividly when I would wake up in the morning, the first thing I would smell was him making a cup of coffee. And I would go downstairs, and as soon as he saw me, he would take his coffee and make this great big slurping sound. And we would just laugh. And it was just such a great memory. And Dar says, I never knew that about him. That's a very cool story. And so that's a moment that involved, someone sure. in their 70s, an adult, and it was quite powerful. The other thing that we get feedback on with Think Like a Shrink, because we do include those six basic emotions, we get a fair number of wives coming up and saying, I like playing this game with my husband because he will never, ever mention a feeling on his own. But when you put it in a fun context where there's no, general commitment to it, he begins to become a little more emotionally intelligent, which is kind of a cool finding.
Yeah, that's a great finding. What are your future plans?
Well, our plans are to, right now, is to try to get the word out as much as we can about Think Like a Shrink. And based on that, we've looked at another version, a second version of the game, in which the prompts and the snapshots are more focused on parent and adolescent interactions.
Uh-huh.
So that quite often it's difficult for parents and adolescents to have conversations. I have two adolescents at home, and so I can speak personally to that.
Yeah.
And if we do a game version of that, we can set them down and have them talk to each other through the prompts and through the snapshots. And we've done some of this during our play testing with Think Like a Shrink. And one of the comments I remember at a play day in Portland, Oregon, was a parent who disclosed about something she did when she was an adolescent, and her adolescent daughter just looked at her with big open eyes and said, Mom, I never knew you did that. I never knew you did that kind of stuff at all. And the whole thing that happened there was that the daughter saw her mother as a person, not just as a parent. And you could see something happening between them where there was an opportunity for them to talk further about that and perhaps other things as well.
Do you think will it have the same name when you imagine it, or do you think you'll change the name somehow?
Yeah, it might be something like Family Therapy, the game. Because it's tongue in cheek, Dr. Dave. Think like a shrink. It's tongue in cheek. Family therapy. It's not really therapy. It's just we're just two docs in a box trying to make fun games for people.
Yeah, yeah. And is it currently available? How do people get it?
So in terms of Think Like a Shrink, you can Google it. It's available on Amazon. It's also available at select Barnes & Nobles and also some other small toy stores around the country. So you Google Think Like a Shrink and they'll find it without any problem whatsoever.
Oh, that's good. That makes it very easy. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to say here that you didn't get a chance to get in?
What do you think, Matt?
No, I think the most important aspect is just reinforcing that the concept of social connectedness is one of the best ways to predict not just good mental health, but longevity. And anything we can do that enhances social connectedness, actual interpersonal social connectedness, is a great service to society. So whether that is board games or pickleball or what have you, just getting people to get together, put down their phones, put down their devices, right, and engage with conversation and people is a great thing for mental health.
I agree. And what comes to mind is the sort of horrible political divide that we're in right now. And I wonder if there's a way, another version somehow, that would get people on different sides of the political spectrum to sit down with each other and interact. And it could even be part of a larger, I could imagine, community meetings organized around this, you know, fit into some other kind of larger effort.
It's always possible, though that sounds like a very loaded subject. But we have found that people have talked about some pretty interesting stuff playing the game. I think my last thoughts that I would have for you is I want to be really clear that this game is not intended to be therapy. It doesn't take the place of going to see a licensed, qualified therapist. It was made to present an option for families and adults that like game night, something along the lines of apples to apples, what do you mean, Cards Against Humanity, these very popular games that involve, you know, using cards and making selections. But we just wanted to present something that could compete with those games that would add this other layer of emotional intelligence and the ability for people to find out how good they are at reading other people and predicting it by getting immediate feedback after they do so. And but we're not trying to be therapeutic. We're trying to be fun.
Yeah. I'm also wondering, cross-culturally, I could see taking this game to other countries, other cultures, and just wondering, you know, what kind of things you would learn there. And because it sounds like it could appeal to many other cultures, and I wonder if there's some out there that would really stumble somehow with it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be done in any culture. Some of the prompts may change to be more specific to concepts and practices in that country, but the basic game mechanic would apply anywhere. I can truly, honestly tell you that when you play most board games, and you know, 3 days later, you remember had fun, but you don't remember much about it. And we've had many people tell us about their memories of specific rounds of Think Like a Shrink, and it's very unforgettable. And that's something really special that we're really proud of.
Yeah. Yeah, and indeed you should be. Well, psychologist Dr. David Stone and psychiatrist Dr. Matt Keen, I want to thank you guys for being my guests today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
It was a blast.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with my recent guest, psychologist Dr. David Stone and psychiatrist Dr. Matt Keene. Since I did not have a copy of their board game, Think Like a Shrink, I really had the wrong impression about it, and I'm afraid I went off on a big rant. Very rare for me. I thought the game players would be using DSM diagnostic categories on one another. Little wonder that triggered my rant. Instead, I discovered that the good doctors have been very ethical in the creation of what looks like a very fun and engaging board game. I'm also impressed by the pro-social benefits of the game and the fact that research supports them as well. I'm definitely going to want to get a copy of this game for my family from Amazon, and I suspect that many of you will want to do the same. I say, go for it.
Hi, Dr. Dave. This is Andrea Nuss, and I made a donation because I support Shrink Wrap Radio. I feel I stay on the cutting edge of all things therapy, and I gained a lot of insight on my own way of being. It's been an incredible resource to me in my still young career. Thank you, Dr. Dave, and your guests for providing such an engaging platform of information.
Thank you, Andrea Nuss. I'm glad you found the show to be expanding your career options. Also, thank you for encouraging others to follow your fine example. Time once again to shrink wrap it up. Big thanks to psychologist David Stone and psychiatrist Matt Keene for telling us about their board game, Think Like a Shrink. It goes so well with the name of this show, I only wish I had thought of it. Next week, our guest will be UK shaman Paul Francis sharing his story. I hope you'll join us then. Until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves, others, and our precious Earth.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.